Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to a Gegenpod special, the final day of the Premier League season. It's over, and now we know that Leicester City and Leeds United are relegated. Our experts are former Premier League stars, Mark Schwarzer, Thomas Sorensen, and Michael Bridges. They'll break down what it means. We'll also look at who qualified for Europe and the big picture at the end of Match Week 38. I'm your host, Teo Pelizzeri. This is the Optus Sport Football Podcast. Let's get in to the Gegenpod. So it is a Gegenpod in the aftermath of the final day of the Premier League season. Mark Schwarzer joins us in the back of a cab. Schwarzy, where do we find you?
Well, I'm on my way back from Leicester. Leicester's game against West Ham, obviously a very sad ending to the season for Leicester City. They did everything they possibly could on the day, but just wasn't enough, of course.
Michael Bridges, where do we find you?
I am actually sitting in the airport in London after a very, very mixed emotions of a day. I've been to Wembley cheering on Carlisle. I saw them get promoted, witnessed that, and then obviously coming into the lounge to witness Leeds' relegation unfold on television. So it's been a very, very strange and surreal day, hence the glass of wine that I have sitting in front of me.
And Thomas Sorensen, you like me, have pulled an all-nighter. How are you this morning?
Yeah, no, I'm great. Sadly, I'm not in the UK. I'm sitting in a hotel room here waiting to go in and wrap it all up at Optus Sport this morning. So plenty to talk about.
Well, let's start with the relegation picture. Leicester City 2 defeated West Ham 1, but it wasn't enough. Leeds United 1 beaten by Tottenham 4, and Everton, who were in control by the end, 1-0 winners against Bournemouth, even though it went 101 long minutes for them. So Everton survive, Leicester and Leeds go down. Mark Schwarzer, let's start with you because you were at the King Power Stadium. Sum it up for us. Leicester City go from champions to relegated in 7 years.
Well, I think it really just sums up Leicester City as a whole in the last 12 months. A lot of uncertainty around the club. Last summer, Brendan Rodgers saying that, you know, the players, he needed a big overhaul of players. The transfer window came and went. Very limited numbers of players came and went. More went than came. I think Brendan Rodgers then started on the sort of already on the back foot with a lot of players who were probably a bit disgruntled by his comments saying that he needed a massive overhaul. And that really the players probably felt that they didn't have the trust of the manager anymore. And I think throughout the course of the season that showed. Today was one of their better performances. But as we know, you know, it just wasn't enough. You know, over the course of the season, 38 games, the table never lies. And Leicester were, the third worst team in the league and they deserve to go down, unfortunately.
Bridgie, what about your emotions with the relegation of Leeds United? I understand that it was a pretty toxic atmosphere at Elland Road with Leeds fans chanting to sack the board and Spurs fans, even while they were winning, chanting to sack Daniel Levy. So neither team was happy and the end result is that Spurs miss out on Europe and Leeds get relegated.
Well, I think that was the only thing that both sets of fans came together. They were both in favour of chanting against their own boards, like you were saying. So it's been a... Yeah, it was an interesting game. I mean, it's lovely when you get a text off Mark Schwarzer when Tottenham go ahead and he says, who are you supporting today? Well, obviously, Mark realised that I was supporting Leeds United today against my team, Tottenham. And unfortunately, when you go behind early on in a game like that, in the first half and the second half, Leeds, I know it was out of their hands, but you still want to go out with some form of performance for the fans, even if it's you're relying on other results, you know. And unfortunately, Leeds could not do that today. They were totally... overwhelmed by the occasion, it got the better of them and totally outclassed, sadly. So all in all, like you say, it was not, from what I've witnessed and what I've heard, it wasn't a great environment to be at today at the stadium. And as you can imagine, emotions were running very, very high, and rightly so. You know, the fans have paid a lot of money to go there. They've waited so long to be in the Premier League, and unfortunately, Leeds have fallen out of the Premier League quicker than what most expected. And now it's all about how long is it going to take them to bounce back. And hopefully, if they can sort things out in the summer and get back on track with as soon as they possibly can, then it's going to make life so much easier. But there's a lot of stuff going to go on in the summer, I think, regarding the obviously the players that are there. Like you say, the fans have been putting against the board and things like that. So there's going to be a lot unfolds, and obviously they need to find a manager as well.
Bridgie, I'm going to have to take you back there, mate, because the message I sent you was, I said that your Spurs team is playing well today. That's what I said to you. And you got a bit upset about that. I don't understand why.
And I said to you, Mark, today's Spurs are not my team.
What does it say about Leeds that they conceded after 90 seconds in the first half and after 80 seconds in the second half? I mean, the team talk clearly out the window within the first 2 minutes in both halves, Bridgie.
Yeah, well, that's it. Like I say, if you're going to go into a game plan and it goes out the window early doors, you know, Harry Kane, the first 4 minutes of the game, you've got your backs to the walls. And then what you've got to do is get yourself back into a game because, you know, you need the 3 points. And I think that moment in time, everybody was kind of really down. But when Jack Harrison got the goal back at 2-1, everybody, you know, you can feel the lift. I'm on social media all the time, seeing what's going on. I'm speaking to a few of the guys, like Andy Cousins at the game, saying what's it like, how's it unfolding. And then straight away, the counter-attack happens and it's 3-1. It just sucks the life out of the stadium, the players and everything like that. So it's the coach-killing moments. And like you say, even if Leeds had gone on to win, would have given the fans something at least to cheer out in the last game of the season. But it was too far gone. You know, Everton with Dyche have managed to pull off a minor miracle.
Bridgie, what time is your appointment at the job centre tomorrow?
Yes, thank you, Mark. Well, listen, you can have a laugh at my expense, but what you've got to think about, we've all been in relegation battles. You know, the side of it, we can have a laugh and a chuckle when teams are going down. You're having a laugh and a go at me, but we've got to think about the people at the football clubs that potentially can lose their jobs, and that's the side that hurts. You know, the players will always find other clubs to be part of or to bring Leeds United back. But, I know a lot of the people behind the scenes that are the DNA of these football clubs. Some of them are volunteers, and the people that work there that you've known for years may lose their jobs. And that's the worrying side of it for me, and the bit that really hurts. And it should be hurting the players as well, because obviously they're all part of it, and everybody's on the same journey when things are going high. But when they're down in the dumps, yeah, I'm a little bit concerned about all the people that are behind the scenes.
Thomas, are Leeds at risk of a double drop? They've obviously had to throw the kitchen sink at staying up. Sam Allardyce came in, a club that's lost their way and lost their identity. How much risk are they at now that they have ultimately been relegated?
I think it's always a risk. You know, we saw the teams that went down last year, only one has come back up. You know, so it is always a struggle. And I think my worry is that, and then Bridgie will probably, he can elaborate a bit more, but there seems to be a lot of trouble. You know, behind the scenes, you know, who's the manager? Is Sam Allardyce, is he going to stay on, or are they going to look elsewhere? And, you know, a lot of their talent will probably leave, be bought up, wanting to play in the Premier League. So it's always a worrying time. And as Bridgie said, not just for players and everything else, but for staff. And I do worry, you know, it took them so long to get back, and it could take the same amount of time again. So double drop, I don't think so, but you know, I don't think it'd be a straight back up.
Mark, has this ruined Sam Allardyce's reputation as the firefighter, 1 point from 12, or did he take on an impossible job and indeed it proved to be impossible?
I think certainly people will say that, you know, obviously Allardyce came in so late, was it four games, and the impact was next to zero. 1 point, I think they've picked up in those four games. So I think it's one of those ones where in the future it won't necessarily be someone that a club will turn to try and help them in a dire situation. I mean, we've seen, if you use the example of Roy Hodgson, I know he had a lot more games to keep Palace in the league, but his impact was instant the minute he walked through those doors. Whereas with Sam Allardyce, unfortunately for Leeds United and Sam Allardyce, it hadn't been. So there seems to be a lot more going on at Leeds United than at some of the other clubs.
Yeah, do you know this, Swarty? I think if he'd been given the time when Javier Gracia came in, I think if Sam had had that kind of time frame, we might have seen a different side of it. I think the change, you know, Victor Orta wanting to go with the pressing style that we witnessed at Leeds United under Bielsa. Then obviously Jesse Marsh came in, the Leeds did press. You know, Gracia tried that and then went a bit more defensively. I just feel that the atmosphere at the time from here behind the scenes, it just they didn't captivate the players at that time. Whereas when Sam came in, he did. He got the place buzzing again. He got smiles on their faces. People wanting to come in and train once again. But like you say, I just think it was a little bit too short. But I think if he'd had got the time, I think the firefighter Sam would have done a job. But it was just too short notice, unfortunately.
Bridgie, is there a Vincent Kompany type manager who can come in and turn Leeds 180 degrees? Because this time last season, no one thought Burnley was going to be winning the championship by more than 10 points, and never mind playing a great style of football and actually looking like they're going to come up into the Premier League and make a real go of it. So things can change dramatically with the right hire. Do you think Leeds are a club in a position to do what Burnley has done and come back with a vengeance?
I would love to think so, Tio. And there's definitely somebody out there with that kind of pedigree. Who that is, I don't know at this moment in time, because Leeds have got a lot of other things to worry about. You know, the ownership, what's going on there. That's the priority, because the last thing you want to do is appoint somebody and then find out that the ownership has changed and they want somebody different. And that can happen. That is a reality. So I think it's one step at a time. They see how everything unfolds. But there is definitely somebody out there, because the calibre of players that Leeds have, they've shown that they can get up, and they've survived in the Premier League before. They've got the experience, and you know, it's about getting the right person in place, and that is a decision that you can't just make overnight. That's going to have to be a long process, and it's got to be the right process, because Leeds have gone away from their vision and philosophy to bring in somebody like Sam Allardyce as to what their style was. So again, they're going to have to readdress that and have a look at what do Leeds want as their DNA, and what type of manager do they want.
Bridget, I'm going to throw you a curveball. Can I ask you, what about someone like Kevin Muscat? If you think about the impact that Ange Postecoglou has had at Celtic, playing the style of football he's played, Kevin Muscat's gone into Yokohama, done the same, if not, probably elevated him even a little bit more. Do you think he would be someone that could potentially go to Leeds and bring in the style of football that Leeds fans would really like? And do you think that's even possible now that they're in the Championship?
Well, do you know what it is? If I could get anybody, it would be Ange Postecoglou, mate. I've tried to, you know, I've wanted to see him in the Premier League. I've wanted to see him at Sunderland Football Club over the years. So, you know, the pedigree and what I like about that, Swarty, what you suggested there, I think it's a really interesting, managerial appointment, because what he's done, he has followed in Ange's footsteps, you know, Melbourne Victory, and then he's gone on to do the Yokohama Marinos, and he's also seen the style of play that Ange likes and he can adapt to. But I think Muskie's put his own little sprinkling on it and change a few things up. And if there's anything that the fans of Leeds United love, they love somebody that's a hard man, and they've had Vinnie Jones there, they've had David Batty there, and I'm sure with Muskie, with his past history in the English game and around the world with his tackles, that would spread, and I'm sure you would get the players kicking a few on the field as well. So I like what you're saying, mate, but again, he'd have to go through the process. He'd have to impress everybody at the football club, and he's definitely somebody that, you know, I hadn't even gave that a thought until you mentioned it there, mate. So if that was the case to put his name in the hat, I'd be all up for giving Muskie a glowing reference on that side of it, definitely.
Mark, are we just talking here, or just speculating, or just talking, or what's it? Have you got any inside info at all there, or just throwing it out there?
I'm just throwing it out there. I wish I had some inside information, but I was just thinking about it. I know that, you know, Bridgie mentioned before about Ange. Ange had been talked. We talked about on this podcast about Ange and potentially Leeds United as an option. Obviously, if they stay in the Premier League, now that they're not in the Premier League, what would be another option? And someone like Muskie, I think would be, you know, you mentioned me all Vincent Kompany, a Vincent Kompany like somebody that's been elsewhere, has been successful, and could come into the English game as a manager for their first time, and do a job. And I think Muskie could do a very, very good job at somewhere like Leeds United.
Thomas, let's talk about the other team that went down, Leicester City. It's been apparent for much of the back half of the season that players like Maddison, Tielemans and Barnes are all in the shop window. Is it inevitable now that all three of them go, potentially more players, and just how much does that leave Leicester in a difficult position to, again, do a Burnley and bounce back into the Premier League?
You know, again, it's another club where, you know, they've been selling a little bit more stable, I would say, than Leeds. And they are going to lose, you mentioned a few of them. You know, we discussed it on a previous podcast that, you know, I hope Suter stays there. You know, I think he'll be fantastic for them, and, you know, can help them, you know, definitely, because that's what counts in the championship. You know, you got to be solid at the back. You know, Danish goalkeeper Iversen, I think he's done reasonably well. He's had a couple of good games. So they've got, you know, can they keep Ignacio up front? I think is also a question. So they, you know, there's going to be a turnaround of players, but can they keep the core of them? I think that is, you know, that is really important. Dewsbury Hall, I think they can probably keep hold of him. You know, so you lose a couple, but, you know, I feel they're in a position at least to make a challenge, I think, for a re-promotion.
Well, I think Youri Tielemans, I think it's pretty obvious that he'll be moving on anyway. He's had a contract in the summer. I think a lot has talked about him. He's been linked with a lot of clubs, and I there's no way in the world, in my opinion, I would see Youri Tielemans staying at Leicester City in the summer. Same as James Maddison. Harvey Barnes, I'm not quite sure. He has been linked heavily away from the club. He's been one of the main players along with James Maddison. He's a leading goal scorer in the Premier League this season for Leicester City. I think it's 13 goals he's scored. Scored again today, of course. So, yeah, huge talent, obviously huge assets. And I think the owners certainly will probably be looking at trying to bring in some much-needed revenue. You know, I know they have had big hits during the COVID pandemic, obviously being in duty-free and parts in Bangkok, in Thailand, in the airport. And obviously that was hit massively by COVID. So I know that that's had a massive impact on the club's ability and the ownership to have backing of the club. So I would think now the drop back down into the championship is an opportunity for them to cash in on some of those big assets and then hopefully restart again.
So Everton is the team that did survive, but they didn't learn their lessons between last season and this one. They got away with it last season. They get away with it again today. Thomas, are they heading for three relegation battles in a row, or is there any evidence that they will have learnt their lessons from having narrowly avoided the drop two seasons in a row?
You know, again, you know, it seems to be a theme for these clubs. You know, you got Mujari, you know, the owner as well. You know, if they've struggled to find any sort of sporting director. Bill Kenwright is obviously in, you know, also in charge there. And you just look at the team today. You know, Sean Dyche had to play with a back five. You got Dwight McNeil and James Garner playing as wing backs. You got, you know, Calvin Lewis is obviously missing out, so they've got no out and out striker. And Damari Gray has to do a job. You know, Decore signed a new contract, and at least he came in and rewarded the club with the goal they needed. But you know, when you got two goalkeepers on the bench, you know, you have to put on a Sean McAllister who's 20 years old and has played no minutes in the Premier League. You know, I question, you know, have they got the money to go out and get the players that they really need? I fear that they will be in a similar situation next year, because I don't think the club is in order. I don't think it's shaped up to actually deal with this situation. They've got a new stadium that they have to think about as well. So I think we could be on for a third year, Theo. We'll see. But maybe Sean Dyche will surprise us.
Well, Bridgie, do Everton even keep Sean Dyche? I mean, it's not like his record was good. It's just that other teams were worse.
Well, I think if anybody deserves a contract to keep a club and have another go, it's, you know, Sean Dyche. He's done the job. He's kept them in the Premier League. And like you say, with Burnley, he wasn't my favourite style of play. But I think Everton fans don't care. As long as they found somebody that can get something out of these players, that's exactly what he's been able to do. So, you know, I think it would be only kudos if you did see Sean Dyche back in the Premier League with Everton and giving him a chance to prove his worth once again with a club. Like I say, I think the last thing Everton need at this moment in time again is another managerial change, when the players have just got to know the guy. They've built a relationship with him and they've been producing. So hopefully we do see that continue at Everton for Sean Dyche.
What do you mean you're not very much of a fan of Sean Dyche's football? I mean, didn't you once say, or on a number of occasions actually say, if they were playing in your back garden, you would draw the curtain?
That's exactly what I said on numerous occasions, Swartie, and I stand by it. There's several times when he played, when he's manager at Burnley, I would shut the curtains if they were playing in my front garden. But I've actually seen a little bit of it. You know, Everton, there's been a few moments where I've looked at them and thought, oh yeah, that's all right, because Frank Lampard, took that when he was when I was watching Frank Lampard managing of Everton. That he became the new team that I would shut the curtains when he was managing Everton. But Sean Dyche has got something out of them, mate. So I take that back from him. It might just have been the players that he had at his disposal, and maybe he's got a little bit more pedigree at Everton. So I'd like to see him continue on because I do like him as a character.
Bridget, can you just clarify a thing? You know, you're saying that you can shut your curtains in your back garden, but now you're saying you can shut your curtains in your front garden. Like, how big is your front garden?
Well, Tommy, some of us have got a little bit of land at the front and at the back. Swarty's got it on the east wing, the west wing, the north and the south wing. That's how well he's done.
Well, what I want to know is, Bridgie, when did you move into Mark Schwartz's house?
Well, he's only offered us to stay there a few times, mate. And unfortunately, when I rang the bell to get some service, he couldn't hear it because he was about 100 metres away at the other end of the house.
Mark, same question to you. Everton's existence going forward, are they now a team that is permanently in the class of relegation battler, or are there some moves they can make to return to the mid-table team, even the upper mid-table Europe-chasing team that we used to know for so much of the last 10 to 15 years?
Well, I think they're at a pivotal moment right now. I think what the guys were saying, Sean Dyche has done a really good job. I mean, I know he hasn't won a lot of games for them, but he came in under very, very difficult circumstances. I think he showed real fight and determination, got the fans on board, which we know at Everton at the moment is a really, really toxic relationship between the fans and the club ownership. Even the board of directors haven't actually been at Everton games since January because of fear of their safety at games. That's how bad it's become. A player like Graham Sharp is an absolute legend in the club, can't set foot in the ground at the moment because of the toxicity with the fans and the board. So I think with Sean Dyche, they have a strong enough manager, a manager who has enormous amount of experience in the Premier League, knows what it takes to stabilise a club, give him a little bit, give him support, give him a bit an opportunity to mould the side. I think they're at a point where they can actually create stability, and that's something that they certainly need on the football pitch right now, and hopefully off the football pitch, the ownership situation will be sorted sooner rather than later.
Stay with us on the Gegen Pod. We will wrap up the European race and the loose ends at the end of the Premier League season.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to the Gegen Pod. We've got Thomas Sorensen, Mark Schwartzer and Michael Bridges joining us from an airport lounge in London. So, Bridgie, as we say goodbye to you, a little word on where you were today watching Carlisle win promotion, but also on Aston Villa securing their spot in Europe.
Yes, well, it was an amazing day down at Wembley. I went down there with the Carlisle United as one of the ambassadors and working alongside Ashley Williams, who was there doing the ambassador work for Stockport County. An incredible day. You know, Carlisle going behind in that game and somehow found a way to get themselves back involved in it. Yet another match in the playoffs went to extra time. It went to penalties. The fingernails have gone, but there was a guy there, the manager of Carlisle United, Paul Simpson. I had the pleasure of working alongside him as my manager when I won promotion with Carlisle United from Division 2 to Division 1, just like he has done again. So he's got the key to the city. He's got the fans on board, and Carlisle United, it was an incredible day unfolded in front of us. So that was emotional. I saw his family there as well, because his son is actually one of the analysis team for Stockport County. So the dad got the upper hand at the dinner table, and Simo's used that to his advantage. So it was a great day, but unfortunately, like you say, about the Premier League, Leeds United, I witnessed them go down. That's put a tarnish on it. In the question about Aston Villa, I've got to say, I mean, you probably go to Thomas Sorensen next on this one, but you think of the job Unai Emery has done when he came in, taking them from 16th position into a European spot. I think that is absolutely incredible. Eddie Howe's done an amazing job at Newcastle. Unai Emery has done just an incredible job as well, and matched it as well. When you think Steven Gerrard had a similar group of players. So, yeah, you've got to give this man credit. He's won everything in Europe possible for Sevilla, He's done that. I thought he was very good when he was at Arsenal. Sadly, it came to a bit of an end, and it's great to see him back in the Premier League. And Tommy must be absolutely buzzing with what's unfolded this season.
Bridgie, yes or no as we let you go. Harry Kane scored his 29th and 30th goals of the season today. Were they his last in a Tottenham shirt?
I'm a man of a lot of words, but I'm just going to say yes. There you go.
So they were his last. It's goodbye, Harry Kane.
It's goodbye, Harry Kane. There you go. Yes, it's done.
Wow.
Yep. It's done and dusted. Where he goes, nobody knows. But I think he's staying in the Premier League to try and beat Alan Shearer's record. I'll tell you one. Don't be surprised if we don't see him in a Chelsea shirt next season.
Bridgie, safe travels. Thanks for joining us.
Take care, everybody. And thanks to all the listeners. Pleasure being on once again, lads. Take care.
Thank you to Michael Bridges. Thomas Sorensen, let's stay with you. Aston Villa beating Brighton 2-1, confirming that Conference League place. As Bridgie mentioned, Unai Emery, a sensational part of the season after taking over from Steven Gerrard. Where to from here? Because it was another very impressive win today against a Brighton side that, as we know, had already secured their own spot in the Europa League.
Yeah, De Zerbi has done a great job, obviously, for Brighton. But I think what you know, Emery has done since he took over there in late last year, I think is tremendous. He's brought the club back to Europe for the first time since 2010. I think, you know, when you speak to people around the club, it's the way he's revitalized the squad, because you're looking on paper, it's more or less the same players, especially Watkins up front. I think he's been tremendous, you know, scoring goals. You know, you look at his record before under Steve Gerrard, and now it's like two different players, and that's what he's done at the clubs he's been at. So, you know, I don't want to get my head in the clouds, but I think you can realistically now go in and say Europe should be the goal next year. You know, can they make a push, you know, for a Champions League or for a Europa League? I think, you know, it depends on who they get in player-wise. But overall, I think as a Villa fan, I'm super excited. You can finally see, you know, the club is in a stable condition. They've got a good manager. They're moving in the right direction. And it's been a while since that has happened.
There's a lot of momentum, of course, behind Aston Villa at the moment, but Tottenham, not so much. They did at least win a game to end the season, but with Ryan Mason at least going out a winner against Leeds, was this the last Spurs game before Ange Postecoglou takes over? Because the news cycle there continues to throw his name up in a very meaningful way.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I think Tottenham, you know, a lot of managers will look at that situation now. You know, with what's going on with Daniel Levy, we've actually got an Australian, Scott Munn, who's moved in, you know, who was at Melbourne City. He's a sporting director, or has been given the job as sporting director. So there's a lot of new faces, old faces. What's really the situation there? And I think that's what Postecoglou will look at. Is it a stable enough environment for him to take the next step in his career? And you know, I think Tottenham have put themselves in a horrible a pickle with managers available. They've already missed out on a couple. You know, Nagelsmann didn't want to go. And, you know, we saw the final manager not going, staying there. So, you know, I wouldn't advise him in this situation, because he definitely needs a lot of answers, I think, for him to take the job. But I hope so, because I really feel that Postecoglou could be a man that could finally turn Tottenham around.
Schwartzy, same questions that I've asked to Bridgie and Thomas. Was today Harry Kane's last goal in a Tottenham shirt? And was today the last Spurs game we see before Ange Postecoglou takes over?
Well, I think for Harry Kane, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Daniel Levy, obviously, I mean, Bridgie mentioned about possibly going into Chelsea. I just can't see for the life of me Daniel Levy allowing that to happen. I'd love to see Harry Kane at Chelsea, because I think he'd be the perfect player, exactly what Chelsea would need. But he's also the sort of player that a club like Manchester United need. So I think he's less likely to sell him to a club like Chelsea, but would more likely sell him to someone like Man United. And I think that this is the time where Harry Kane has to put his foot down to leave the club if he wants to go on and win trophies. However, the flip side of that is, someone like Ange going into the club, I actually think they'd be genuine contenders for trophies. At what level? Straight away? Maybe not, but certainly giving him the right time, giving him the right framework, I think he could make Tottenham very competitive at the top end of the table.
Well, that was the scene for the Conference League, and don't forget, West Ham can still make the Europa League if they beat Fiorentina in the Conference League final. Luton Town beat Coventry City on penalties to get promoted. All three promoted teams avoided relegation this season. Next season, we will have Burnley, Sheffield United and Luton Town in the Premier League. So, Mark Schwarzer, what's your first impression on the teams coming up? And do you think anything about the teams coming up into the league next season? What's your hot take on how the Premier League looks with the entire off-season ahead of us?
Well, I'm actually really, really excited to see how Vincent Kompany does with Burnley. I really am. I think that, for me, is going to be an exciting start to the season. I just feel, obviously, they're going to have a bit more money. They're going to have more opportunity to bring in better quality players. And I obviously the football that Vincent Kompany got his team to play this season was fantastic. And at a Burnley side that even Michael Bridges will start watching these days. So I'm excited to see them in the Premier League and see what Vincent Kompany can really do. So they're probably the one team that I am. I'm also excited to see a first home game for Luton Town in the Premier League. What's that going to be like? Obviously a tiny, tiny stadium. A lot said about the gates where the away fans walk in into the stadium. So that's going to be an interesting factor. And obviously Sheffield United, we know it's a tough place to go for any team. It's a really great atmosphere to watch football. Whether or not they're going to be good enough to stay in the league, only time will tell. Will we see three promoted teams stay in the league? I don't think this time.
And Thomas Sorensen, with the entire off-season ahead of us, what impressions has the season just finished left with you?
No, I think it's been a fantastic season. I think there's been so many storylines. The top two fighting it out all the way to the end, more or less. And it bodes well. You're looking at teams, Manchester United, I think, will be a threat for those top two next year. You would expect Liverpool to be better, and what's going to happen with Chelsea. And I think we've just seen so many teams improve. You know, we haven't even mentioned Brentford. I think Thomas Frank has done an incredible job there. And the newly promoted sides, yeah, I agree with Schwartz. I think Vincent Kompany will be a story to see him at the absolute top level. He's done a great job so far. And then Kenilworth Road, you know, Luton are talking about they're having to spend £10 million on just getting it ready for the Premier League because of facilities and everything else, and holding about 10,000 fans. It's going to be a little tight. Back to the old days kind of Premier League games. So I think a lot of teams will struggle to go there. It's very intense. Fans right on top. I heard from some of the Sunderland players. They really struggled, going to Luton in the playoffs. So, you know, that'll be another interesting story. Will they survive? Even though Rob Edwards has done a great job as manager there, can they attract the players? That's going to be my question. You know, that'll be a big challenge for them. But looking forward to it for sure.
All right, final question for today's Gegenpod. Next season's champion, you can choose Manchester City or the other 19 clubs. Thomas, who are you taking?
You're asking the wrong person, man. I'm a Man City fan, so I'm gonna definitely back them all the way next year. I think they'll be strong, come out stronger as well. You know, they're gonna keep their squad together. They might add one or two. You know, they're the team to beat, and I'm sure the others will push them. But I see Man City again at the top next year.
Schwartzy, can the combined efforts of Man United, Arsenal, Newcastle, Chelsea, Liverpool, can they catch Man City, or do you take Man City over the field?
Well, Man City are definitely favourites again already at this stage to retain the title. I've got no doubt about that. Will they retain it? That is a very interesting question. This season, they were probably pushed more than probably a lot had thought. I thought Arsenal did a tremendous job in pushing them, with three or four games to go. I'd like to think there's going to be more competition. I'd like to think that Man United are going to get better and Arsenal will get better. I'd like to think that Man United will start to push them a bit more next season. And it's going to be interesting next weekend in the FA Cup final, whether that's the beginning of it, with Manchester City already having eyes on the Champions League. So, I'd like to think that probably and also Liverpool. Liverpool's going to have a really interesting off-season. They're losing some big name players that have not necessarily at the peak of their game anymore, but have been, you know, mainstays in the side for a number of years. Now James Milner, Firmino, naming two of them, Chamberlain, obviously Oxlade-Chamberlain's leaving. So I think, just to name a few, I think Naby Keita's leaving as well. So there's going to be a mini, kind of almost mini rebuild at Liverpool. Recruitment's going to be absolutely key for Jurgen Klopp again this off-season. And I just wonder whether or not that the number of players they're going to bring in, can they adapt to Jurgen Klopp's style of football quick enough to be competitive next season, maybe the season afterwards. But if I'm going to go with 18, that's going to push Manchester City, I'm going to probably say Man United.
Mark Schwarzer, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And Thomas Sorensen, thanks for the early rise to join us as well.
Yeah, Theo, thank you. And I'll probably see you in about 10 minutes back into Optus.
Yes, a big thanks to Mark Schwarzer, Thomas Sorensen, and Michael Bridges. Make sure to subscribe to the Gegen Pod because our regular weekly episode will be back on Wednesday morning, including a wrap of the WSL final day, where, of course, Sam Kerr's Chelsea won the championship. My name is Teo Pellizzeri. Thank you for your company on the Optus Sport Football Podcast. You've been listening to the Gegen Pod.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.